This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Hi, everybody. I'm Freddie Bell, and welcome to an all-star weekend show. What do I mean by that? Well, Joe McKenzie of Ripple Connects is here. Leibel Sternbach is here to talk finance. I'll share with you some information from Elizabeth Ebalt. She is a vaccine equity director for the Minnesota Department of Health. Also joining us is Kathy McLear, AARP Minnesota's state director, talking about the impacts of coronavirus and help for frontline workers. We'll also have some information about having a strong immune system, and we'll give you our weekend review and, of course, our words to the wise. Stay with us. New Beginning starts right now. Joining us right now from the Minnesota Department of Health is the Vaccine Equity Director Elizabeth Ebalt. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Freddie.
Glad you're with us. Mask mandates, mask mandates, mask mandates. A lot of folks are wondering, what is it about this? We still see people wearing masks. There are people who are not wearing masks. The president earlier this week was not wearing one at the State of the Union address. What is the line, or what is the narrative that we should understand, Elizabeth, when it comes to mask mandates?
Yes, this is a big one, and it's a really good question, and it's nuanced. So let's try and break it down. So last week, the CDC announced these updated guidelines for wearing masks, and it's largely dependent on where you are in the country and how COVID-19 is affecting the hospitals and clinics near you. So the CDC said, for people who live in low to medium risk areas, and low to medium risk is basically determined by how strained the hospitals are in a given area, those people can choose to go mask-free indoors. But for people who live in high-risk areas or areas where hospitals are very strained, masking indoors should remain the practice. Now, for people who are wondering, well, then how do I know if I'm in a low, medium, or high-risk area? The CDC has a new tool that they release. It's at the top of the main page of their website at cdc.gov. And this tool allows you to search by county and figure out what risk level you're living in. So ultimately, I think what we need to keep in mind with this is that this updated masking guidance is intended to allow for these small breaks from mask wearing for those who choose to take it. But it also provides parameters for if and when we need to return to mask wearing writ large in our schools and communities. But it's really important to not forget about people who are not comfortable taking off their mask for various reasons or cannot take off their mask due to their age or health conditions they're living with, or our young children who cannot get vaccinated. For those people, it still remains important to have, you know, a snug two-layer mask that fits over your nose and mouth, much like we've talked about this whole time, and the highest standards of those being KN95, N95, or surgical masks. And for those people who are taking off your masks, I think it's just really important to still do everything to remain respectful of and cautious towards those who can't. So that's making sure, you know, if you're going to be visiting someone, you know, don't visit someone if you're sick, or if you're spending time with someone who might be immunocompromised, you know, make sure that you're in a healthy place and you're getting tested beforehand, you know, things like that. So I think this, the biggest takeaway with this news is that we're moving in the right direction. In Minnesota, we have less than 1,000 cases per day, which is down from 3,000 cases per day. We're less than 5% of our tests are coming back positive, and our hospitalizations are at the lowest level in 6 months. So this is positive news. And so therefore we can adjust some of our guidance while at the same time maintaining our preparedness for the next variant and how we will quickly be able to re-implement these strategies that are tried and true that we've had this whole time, masking, testing, vaccination, if we need to confront that.
So do you see COVID-19 as being more of a seasonal issue rather than a pandemic issue over time?
I mean, I definitely think that we're bringing down sort of the, even the way we're talking about it, some of the, you know, real emergency intensity that we felt for so much of the last 2 years in responding to COVID-19. And I think that we're shifting into more of a, you know, management, you know, crisis management scenario with it. We know the things that are working to keep cases down, to make sure people aren't getting very sick and getting in the hospital and getting hospitalized, excuse me. And so I think it's at this point, with all of those tried and true strategies, like I mentioned, we just want to keep maintaining them. We don't want to drop any of those balls because that's really where we see the emergencies come from.
Everyone, we're talking with Elizabeth Ewald. She is the Vaccine Equity Director for the Minnesota Department of Health. Tell us about, we saw the story about the Pfizer vaccine giving a shorter protection span for children 5 to 11. Should we be concerned about this?
Another good question. So this week, to backtrack, you know, Pfizer released some new data, and this is basically coming on the heels of the Omicron surge that we experienced at the end of last year and the beginning of this year. And this new data was about how effective its lower dose vaccine that is given to 5 to 11-year-olds is at preventing getting infected with COVID-19 for this age group. So the data found that the lower dose series given to this age group is less effective than the higher dose series given to people 12 and older at preventing initial infection. But what is very important and remains true is that the series given to 5 to 11-year-olds still works really, really well at keeping them from getting very sick or from being hospitalized if they do get infected. And one thing just to keep in mind, you know, with potentially the reason why they have this lower protection at the initial infection for this age group is because, remember, they do get that one-third of a dose given to older kids and adults. So while I know that for parents and caregivers, you might be a little worried about this news, but I think to put it in context, we should remember that this version of the vaccine was really developed in response to an earlier variant that was a little less infective. So we shouldn't be too alarmed by this development. The vaccine is still incredibly effective at keeping our littlest ones from getting really sick, ending up in the hospital, like I said, and if they are infected. And so that really remains a critical part of, you know, moving us forward is getting vaccinated with this age group and, of course, our 12 and over age group too. So currently Pfizer, they're testing the effectiveness of a third dose in kids under 5 and are also doing so now for kids 5 to 11. So we should hopefully be seeing those results very soon. And research continues generally on how to improve the vaccines to better respond to multiple variants.
Generally speaking, will this vaccine be effective against yet another variant of the Omicron variant as we go forward?
Yeah, and see that, you know, that's kind of part of it is trying to, as we're anticipating and preparing for these changes, you know, that's something that researchers and our health experts are trying to figure out, you know, as we're giving out these additional doses, you know, how does that adjust itself to the possibility of new variants? So hopefully we'll have some good answers on that soon.
We understand that the governor has given out new incentives to get the youngest of our citizens an incentive to go ahead and get the vaccination for their families. Can you talk about that?
Yes, that's so true. And so this week we announced the return of our popular $100,000 college scholarship drawing, this time though for kids 5 to 11 years old. So kids in this age range who receive two shots of the Pfizer vaccine between March 1st and April 11th will be eligible to win, and five winners will be selected on April 15th. The submission form is open now. So to enter, you can visit our vaccine rewards page at mn.gov. or call our COVID-19 hotline at 833-431-2053, and someone will be happy to help you get registered over the phone. I mean, this was a very popular program for our 12-plus population late last year, and we're really excited to bring this back.
We're just about out of time. What about the future of testing sites? Will those go away?
Good question. You know, I think that while some of us might think, okay, positivity is going down, we're over this Omicron surge, and so testing is not as big of a deal anymore. In fact, it's the opposite, because even as positivity is going down, testing remains critical, because testing is how we see the virus. If we can't see it, and if we're not testing for it. So if you have COVID-19 symptoms, if you know or suspect you've been by someone who's positive, or you're planning to take a trip or just return from one, go get tested. And to find a testing location near you, you can visit mn.gov and go to our COVID-19 Get Tested page, or you can call again our COVID-19 hotline at 833-431-2053, and someone will get you connected to a testing location by you. I mean, it's part of our whole package of moving forward, like we talked about. It's very important with vaccination, testing, you know, mask wearing as needed to make sure that we keep those sustained.
Makes sense. She is the Vaccine Equity Director for the Minnesota Department of Health, Elizabeth Ebalt. This is New Beginnings. I'm Freddie Bell, and we'll be right back.
In today's world, we really need words of encouragement. Introducing Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell. Let your mind be opened by the wisdom of thought. Let the inspiration of the words feed your mind, body, and spirit. Regardless of the issues you face each day, Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell can help you power through. Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell, a handy reference. Available on Amazon, FreddieBell.com, and Barnes & Noble.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Glad you're with us this weekend on New Beginnings. Let's talk about travel. A Charlotte, North Carolina family is offering stays at their two mansions in Turks and Caicos, including one formerly owned by Prince. Yes, that Prince. The price of a night stay? Between $12,000 and $36,000, depending on the season, and whether you lease one or both mansions. You might remember that Tom Barnes bought Prince's former mansion on Providenciales, the third largest island in Turks and Caicos, for almost $11 million in 2019. He says that as a teen growing up poor, Barnes idolized Prince. He preserved special features that mark Prince's time in the mansion, including the purple driveway, large dining room mirrors, and various memorabilia. Barnes painted the tennis courts purple. He says most of his clients have been entertainers. Celebrity chef Adrian Fort and a chef who cooked for Prince prepare your meals for you. And if you'd like to get on a cruise, the world's largest cruise company say that they will voluntarily follow public health measures meant to reduce the risk of coronavirus outbreaks on ships operating in the United States. Carnival, Royal Caribbean, and Norwegian, representing more than a dozen brands among them, said that they would participate in the CDC's new voluntary program. Some cruise lines, including Norwegian and Royal Caribbean, also say they're relaxing mask requirements for vaccinated passengers. As part of the program, the CDC will continue displaying a list of cruise ships sailing in the United States waters and indicate whether they have reported coronavirus cases on board. The agency will also show whether a certain percentage of people on ships are vaccinated and whether most on board are up to date with their vaccines. And finally, if you're opening a fine art gallery in Green Bay, what better way to start than with a show connected to Brett Favre? Deej Clearing opened his namesake gallery this month with 23 paintings that were commissioned by the former quarterback, commemorating Favre's at the time NFL record 421 touchdown passes. The series consists of portraits of the receivers who caught each 50th pass, such as Robert Brooks at 50, Edgar Bennett at 100, Antonio Freeman at 150, and so on. Painter James Hartel, a University of Minnesota alumnus, has done commissions for the likes of Ariana Grande, Reggie White, Fleetwood Mac, and many others. And if you prefer to head down south, the Alamo, once dubbed the worst tourist trap in Texas, is about to shed much of the schlock that greets visitors. The site of the famously doomed 1836 stand of a tiny band of Texans and Tejanos has long been crowded by garish storefronts and amusement outlets. But as part of an effort by state officials to restore reverence and dignity to the streets near the old mission, Phillips Entertainment has agreed to remove Ripley's Haunted Adventure, a Guinness World Records Museum, and Tomb Raider 3D Adventure Ride and Arcade from nearby. I'm Freddie Bell giving you some ideas for your upcoming healthy travel. This is New Beginnings.
And now, our supporting partner, AARP in the Twin Cities.
Joining us right now on New Beginnings is the esteemed new state director, and I keep saying new because she's not been in the chair that long, Kathy McLear, AARP's Minnesota's state director. Good morning and welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me, Freddie. It's good to be back. And yeah, still relatively new, I guess, since September. So folks maybe haven't heard my voice too terribly much yet.
Indeed. Well, I'm glad that you're with us this weekend. We have a lot to get to. And first of all, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the nursing home dashboard and seniors deserve better.
Right. So the nursing home dashboard is really something that AARP started back in 2020 when we were really at the height of the pandemic. just to look at how this this disease, how COVID-19 was really affecting individuals living in nursing homes. And we know that throughout the pandemic and certainly during the surge of the Omicron variant, it has just been devastating to our folks and older adults who live in nursing homes, especially in Minnesota. And we know that, while Omicron is on the decline and things seem to be getting a little bit better and we're on the upswing of this, we know that even from middle of December to the middle of January, it was just devastating, and it more than quadrupled from the prior month. For staff members who work in nursing homes, and it more than doubled for residents who live in nursing homes. And really what this did, Freddie, is it really underscored the chronic problems that are happening ongoing in Minnesota's nursing homes, and we really have to start addressing some of those issues in long-term care.
So what's the first good step for addressing these issues, Kathy?
Right. So a big piece of it is expediting access to home and community-based services. Mm-hmm. So AARP research overwhelmingly shows that we all want to stay in our homes and our communities as we age. And I think a lot of times what happens is, folks who may be transitioning out of the hospital or, maybe don't have a caregiver to care for them in their home, they're getting funneled into nursing homes. And while there is an appropriate time and place for that type of care, we know that in Minnesota, billions of dollars are being spent, getting care for our seniors in those very expensive nursing homes, where we could be spending about a third of what nursing home costs if we prioritize those home and community-based services. So maybe just someone needs a little extra help with bathing. Maybe they just need some help cooking some meals or grocery shopping for them or cleaning their home that lets them stay in their home a little bit longer. And we know that a lot of times individuals who maybe go into a nursing home, they may be relying on Medicaid to pay for that. Medicaid is typically seen as a payer of last resort. And sometimes when folks might be eligible for Medicaid, they might be waiting sometimes 90 days to get eligibility to get some of those home and community-based services. And so we're really looking at ways to expedite access to those home and community-based services for folks who need that kind of care.
Kathy McClear, AARP Minnesota State Director, a big partner with us right here on your radio station. We're talking about the nursing home dashboard and what is told us. Also, access for people who are needing these home and community-based services. We're just about out of time for this particular segment, but what can our listeners do, members for AARP do, to make sure that our citizens are taken care of, Kathy?
Yeah, so a big way is just to get involved. And so we would invite anyone who wants to learn more about these issues to read up at aarp.org/MN. Certainly, we're looking for stories from individuals who may be impacted by some of these issues. We're also looking to invest in wages and benefits for long-term care workers. We know there's a tremendous long-term care workforce shortage in Minnesota, and now is really the time to invest in those services. And we are urging lawmakers to support these investments and those reforms that can really strengthen Minnesota's long-term care services and supports.
All right. Thank you, Kathy. And this is New Beginnings. And with us right now is Mr. Joe McKenzie. He is the founder of Ripple Connects. You can find him online at rippleconnects.com. And by telephone at 763-438-1621, they have the tenacity and the aptitude to turn candidates into contenders. Joe McKenzie, good morning and welcome back.
Thank you, Freddie Bell. How are you today?
Unbelievable. Glad to talk to you about the discerning job seeker. And why this topic this week?
Well, I think the timing is right. A lot of people are looking to make changes. There's a lot of changes within the workplace, working remotely. There's a lot of strains on different industries, healthcare, technology. I bet you there's more people today than just a few years ago considering doing something different. And for one reason or another, and really what we're attempting to do here is be discerning, essentially help sort through the different opportunities that may exist for you out there. And that has been a long-standing mindset for all our clients to make sure that they find the right job for themselves by being discerning, by using the methodology that's going to allow them to grow and just feel like they've found the right environment to do that. And so I think now more than ever, people are looking, you know, to make sure that they choose the right opportunity, because there are a lot of opportunities out there, Freddie, but we have to make sure that we can discern and like I said earlier, just sort through the different opportunities.
We're talking with Joe McKenzie. He is with Ripple Connects. He's the founder of Ripple Connects, I should say. And so why is being a discerning job seeker, how can it help drive your career over time?
When you do find a good opportunity where you can really sink your teeth into and you feel like you're growing, it helps your career, because that's you're not looking to go somewhere else. You're looking to, you know, just lean in more. You're looking for new projects, new leadership opportunities. So when you find that right environment, that right opportunity, that growth sets in, that upward trajectory in your career sets in, because you do feel like this is where you should be at that moment in your career. And you're not going, okay, maybe I'll just do this for a year and a half and look for something else. You're leaning in on growth. You're leaning in on new opportunities. And that's why a discerning job seeker is a very good mindset to have versus just taking an opportunity just because it may give you a little bit more prestige or money. But at the end of the day, you have to find those opportunities that you really feel that you're making a difference, that you're growing. The human being, they want to be in a position to grow, right? And so those opportunities that you sort through, make sure that you're looking for one of those aspects of this new opportunity, so you can stay there. You can move up within or over, what have you. You're looking for an environment, but not every opportunity is equal in this regard.
So let's go a little bit deeper in helping that individual who wants to be a discerning job seeker. What are some things that should be considered when you're making that career move or that career change?
Well, I think first and foremost, you do need to bring in your bench of advocates so you can have meaningful conversations on potential targets, potential industries. But really what I do think you have to do is ask good questions. And the questions can be for your bench of advocates on some of the unique challenges. What is that industry experiencing? How do my transferable skills relate? But also in the interviewing process, if you're talking with a recruiter or someone on the HR side for a new opportunity, I think preparing good questions that regard your own career well-being and growth and trajectory, I think you have to develop your own questions, Freddie, to make sure you can discern if this is that opportunity. If you go into an opportunity and suddenly then you realize there's no growth, or it's stagnant, or you're not going to be satisfied, then you're essentially going back to square one. So I think it starts with asking good questions of everybody that's involved in the hiring process, be it a recruiter, be it an HR person, or someone that's involved in that company. You have to ask good questions. You know, I've talked about Lou Adler's book, The Essential Guide for Getting Hired. He has some simple questions out there to ask. And some of that could be like, you know, tell me about day one of year two. What would you want me to have accomplished by then? You see forward into that opportunity a little bit when they answer those questions for you. Is there enough growth? Is there enough opportunity? Is there enough resources there for you to carry this out? Or are there so many limitations and constrictions and challenges that you may have to sift through and go on to that next opportunity? To answer your question is ask good questions every step of the way. So I think it's always wise to ask what are the real job needs, like Lou Adler talks about, but what are the challenges? What areas of growth are available to me? What resources are there that I didn't have in the past? I think that is all critical information for us to be a discerning job seeker. Do you agree?
I do. And we've got to leave it right there, Joe. We're all going to be better and more discerning job seekers as a result. And you do some fine work at Ripple Connects.
Yes, we do. We turn candidates into contenders.
And this is New Beginnings.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Oh, and I have one more word about your health before we step away. The body's immune system protects against bacteria, viruses, toxins, and other potentially harmful elements. When our immune systems are strong, we may not notice it at work, but when it's weakened, the symptoms of illness can soon follow. Maintaining a healthy body often starts by taking the steps to give our immune systems a boost. And this isn't something that can be done quickly. Between seasonal illnesses and the COVID-19 pandemic, our immune systems may be top of mind. Return to basic healthy lifestyle principles like eating well and sleeping and reducing stress and trying to stay physically active. All of these really help us. Our immune systems require care, and it's not something that you can give a lasting boost overnight, so it's important not to rush to your cabinet or to the doctor's office for pills. I think a misconception is that there are supplements or products out there that can really boost the immune system that, according to Stephen McMullen, he's a Mayo Clinic family medicine physician. He says, unfortunately, they haven't really had robust evidence that are highly effective. He says, just think about long-term adjustments to our lifestyles. He says a diet that includes lean proteins, 7 to 9 hours of sleep nightly, daily exercise, and eliminating stressors in our life are key to a healthy lifestyle. The results can help us to stay healthy past seasonal illnesses. And finally, healthy lifestyles can also reduce the risk of certain diseases like high blood pressure, heart disease, strokes, cancer, and diabetes. Just a word to help you to make sure that your immune system is as strong as it can be. Hi, everyone. I'm Freddie Bell, and now it's time to talk finance with Leibel Sternbach. Leibel is an Amazon best-selling author of Living with Financial Anxiety and Authenticity. Leibel, welcome back to New Beginnings. How are you this week?
Hey, how are you? How are you doing today?
Unbelievable. I'm so glad that each day that we go, Leibel, we're one more day closer to spring. So I'm really excited about that. My goodness. Just have to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's been quite a cold spell the last few days.
It really has. So, you know, we've got a little respite right now, but I'm really, you know, in that we're indoors a lot more. Maybe this is a time for us to work on budgeting. You know, and I've often heard you talk about finances and you say things like you're running a business or you're your own CFO. And I'm trying to relate that to budgeting and my own personal finances and those of our listeners this morning. What do you mean by that, Leibel?
Yeah, this is especially true in retirement. And as we get closer to retirement, we need to really think about our household and our expenses and the way we run our lives as a business. You've got money coming in and you've got money going out, and you want it to be a net positive at the end, right? So that when you think about a business, right, a business has revenue and it has income, it generates money somehow. And then it has, you know, the costs associated with generating that revenue. It has rent, it has utilities, it has the wages, it has, you know, food expenses, all those costs, taxes that are related to the expenditure of servicing and generating that income. And when we talk about our finances, we need to think about it in terms of a business. We've got income coming in, and during our working years, that's our wages. Those are our side hustles. Those are the interest and in returns on the investments that we make. And those investments may be money, they may be time, they may be the effort that we put into building our career so that we can earn a greater salary. But we have those plus sides of our balance sheet. And then we have the negative side, those debits on our balance sheet that say, you know, what are the costs of doing this? Whether it's a mortgage or it's rent or it's insurance or it's food, education, all of those things need to balance out. And at the end of the day, when you look at your balance sheet, you need it to be, you want it to be cash flow positive, right? That's the point of business, is to be in profit. And you want that for your life. You need to think and get into the mindset of, I am running a business, whether it is my daily life or it is, you know, the thing that I do to sell and generate revenue for my company and my employees, you are a business. And the more that we get into retirement and the less that our employer and our wages and life has kind of laid out for us what the structure is, the more we need to take that responsibility and really make sure to balance that budget and make sure that we look for ways of increasing our revenue and decreasing our expenses. Because the more that we can control that, the better we'll be off and the longer and healthier our retirement will be in our life.
I was just saying that we're talking with Amazon's best-selling author, Lybell Sternbach, the author of Living with Financial Anxiety and Authenticity. And I'm just want to make sure I'm processing this correctly, Lybell. Are you saying in a nutshell, and if this is the wrong nutshell, let me know, that our income less our expenses and that we want it to be greater than zero? Is that where we're going?
Ideally, you want it to be greater than zero, right? That would be the ideal scenario where you have a surplus, right? And now you can save away more money for, you know, later years, for leaner years, or potentially to give over to future generations, right? Whether that's to help the next generation up and help your kids buy their first house, get married, first car, whatever those milestones are that you want to help them with, or the generation that comes after that. Ideally, we want to have a surplus. If we don't have a surplus, right, which can happen, maybe we don't have enough money to generate interest and to generate enough to live off of, then we want to make sure that the negative is a sustainable negative, right? That the outflows that we're the shortfall that we're generating in retirement is one that will last at least through the end of our retirement, so that we don't get to that finish line or we don't start getting close to the finish line. We start looking at our gas tank and going, it's going to hit zero and it's going to get on empty and we're not going to make it, right? That's the worst feeling to have when you are getting to empty and there's no way to refill that tank.
Exactly. How do you go about reducing the expenses then? I mean, we've got to pay the mortgage, we've got to pay the rent, we've got to put the kids through school. What do we do to get those expenses down so we can get to that surplus you were just talking about?
Yeah. So there are two ways to look at this. You can look at it as, I always want to save, I always want to cut it down on those expenses. And you should focus some of your efforts on cutting down those unnecessary expenses. And I talk a lot about things like unnecessary taxation, right? Making sure you're not paying more money than you have to in taxes, making sure that life's unexpected events don't take you by surprise, because those are things that can really shock your system. You also want to make sure, you know, on the smaller things, if there's things that you're constantly paying for that you can pay less for, you can negotiate up front. Those can help you reduce those expenses. But you also got the other side, right? Increasing your revenue. And you shouldn't just look at saving money, but how can you increase the amount of money that you're making? And the two really, really go hand in hand.
So should I, you mentioned a side hustle. I love that term at the beginning of the program. So should I be looking at, or should we be looking at getting another income opportunity, like maybe working at the grocery mart or doing something online to generate income?
Yes. Yeah. So I'm a big fan of side hustles for a number of reasons. One, you got the revenue, right? So whether it's you're working at the grocery store or as Walmart as a greeter, whatever it is that keeps you in contact with people, helps you, you know, generate revenue, gives you maybe some of those side benefits that are really hard to get on your own, like health insurance or other expenses, especially as we get older, you know, dental, vision, that kind of stuff can really be helpful to get through a private insurer and a group insurer. So you have that on one side, but then you also have the flip side. If you don't go as a W-2 employee and you have a side hustle as a self-employed individual, right, where you start your own company and you're filing, you know, either as a self-employed or you get an LLC and you got an S-corp. But when you have a business, suddenly the tax code opens up to you and you can start writing things off as business expenses and figuring out how to have business expenses where you would normally have personal expenses. And you got to do this right so it's not tax evasion. But when you do structure it properly, you suddenly have an opportunity to really reduce the amount of taxable income you have while still generating revenue, which is incredibly helpful in reducing those unnecessary expenses.
Libel, we're talking with Libel Sternbach. So how does this all change, or does it, Libel, as we reach retirement? Does budgeting, is it less of a concern as we go into retirement age?
It is more of a concern. I find it funny how in our younger years, we focus on budgeting. Everyone tells us to budget. And it's, you know, you're a teenager, you budget. You're in college, you know, you try to figure out how to budget. You budget for your first home. But then kind of people forget about to tell you to budget as you're working and you're making income. And it's, oh, well, you're making more than your expenses. So therefore, you can forget about budgeting. No, you can't forget about budgeting. You need a budget then. That's when you need to save your most. But then in retirement, we need to get back into that mindset of that, you know, kid who's, you know, saving up every penny they get for their bicycle or whatever it is that they're saving up for, right? In retirement, we got to hold on to every penny. It really is that, you know, a penny earned is a penny saved. And every penny that we can keep in our pockets and we can keep in our pockets longer and we can figure out how to make it grow into 2 cents and 3 cents and 5 cents and 20 cents will have an impact, not just today or tomorrow, but 10, 20, 30, 40 years into the future. And it's the basis of our financial stability. So we need to relearn those skills that we have long since forgotten and make sure we're accounting for everything. Make sure we're looking for every opportunity to increase our revenue, decrease our expenses, and make our money last as long as possible.
Libel Sternbach with us this weekend. We're talking about budgeting. And budgeting, as I'm understanding it, is important at every age, no matter where you are. I'm also learning that you need to have multiple streams of income as you reduce your expenses. So are there some tools out there right now that you're aware of, Libel, that can help us in this regard to be even more efficient with regard to managing our money, like a CFO, as you mentioned?
There are a lot of apps out there that are specifically designed to help you with budgeting. And my advice to you is go try them all until you find the one that works for you. There, no two people are alike. The way that you think and the way that you view the world is different. And it's not the same as your friend. And your friend may have really great success with one app and you will have success with something completely different. So go find and keep looking for the thing that works for you, that when you look at it, it goes, you say, this is my world. This speaks my language. And if you can't find it out there, then figure out how to make it up, right? I mean, we're not talking about something that's very complex here. It's you got three variables in this equation. You've got assets plus liabilities equals owner's equity. That is the accountant's formula. You need to make those balance out, and you just need some way of tracking. What are my assets? What is my revenue? What are my expenses? What are my liabilities? And those two need to equal out. Because that whatever results from that, that's going to be what you have left over. That's going to be your cash flow. And you want to try to make that number as big as possible. So whether it's having post-it notes on a board, having a spreadsheet that's color-coded, having apps out there, there are ones that will read your receipts automatically for you. One that I found useful was, you know, when you get receipts, you take a picture of it and it categorizes it for you. There's ones that will do that automatically for you. Whatever it takes to help you get control of your finances, to give you that insight that you need, so that you have an understanding of what's the money that's coming in, what's the money that's going out, and what are the levers that I can pull to either increase my revenue or decrease my expenses? And how do I keep an eye on it so that I'm not hit by unexpected and hidden expenses that I wasn't aware were happening?
We're just about out of time, Libel, but I've got to get in this question from Miranda. And she was wondering if you could give her a quick tip for cutting the habits of unnecessary spending. We have less than a minute. Can you help us?
Real quick, the cutting unnecessary spending, the first question I want to ask is, what is it that makes you think it's unnecessary? Why is it that you are spending this money look deep into yourself and ask yourself that question, because oftentimes we're doing things to make ourselves feel safe, to feel like we are protected. We have a roof over our head, food on our table. In answering that question, that will answer for you why you're spending that money. And you may find that it's perfectly valid and it's something you should budget for. Or you may find that you need something else entirely and you're trying to fill a void that you didn't even realize was there.
Thank you, Libel. We look forward to hearing from you again next week. Libel's website is libelonfire.com. That's libelonfire.com. And more New Beginnings is straight ahead.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Hi again, everyone. And right now it's time for our week in review. And while everyone knows about all the issues happening in Kiev and Ukraine, we won't delve into that, but we will tell you about that only so many disasters can fit on the front pages of our world newspapers and websites. We know that there is a war going on in Europe, and after all, it's also likely that the new UN report on climate change won't get the attention that it deserves as well. And that's too bad, because the bigger danger is that the war might also set back efforts to slow the Earth's warming. That according to a UN report. And we also saw this past week that Ketanji Brown Jackson, the first public defender and the first black female ever nominated to the state's highest court, has a good chance of winning confirmation. Reports are also saying that among the items making Ketanji Brown Jackson such an excellent nominee to the Supreme Court is also the thing that makes her ripe for attacks. She once served as a public defender, the very first one ever appointed to the court. And she was effective. Earlier this month, the Washington Post reviewed her record and concluded that as a defense attorney, she won uncommon victories against the government that shortened or erased lengthy prison terms. The Post goes on to say that Jackson's nomination isn't just a good way to expand the Supreme Court's perspectives. It's also a necessary way of pushing back against the notion that it's somehow less legitimate to serve the system as a defense attorney. And no surprise, it probably means that there will be fireworks at her confirmation hearing. And finally, would you like a windfall of free money? Just download an app and start betting on sports. It's easy, it's fun, and it's cool. Don't miss out. That was the pitch in several Super Bowl ads. Gambling owes its allure to magical thinking, the dream that you can get rich overnight without hard work. The reality, of course, is that organized gambling is rigged, and if you hit for $200 today, the house will get it back in the long run and then some. That's why the sportsbooks are now offering newbies quote-unquote free deposits or quote a sure thing bet to lure them into making a wager. The susceptible come to crave more and more action regardless of the consequences. More than 6 million Americans already have a gambling addiction, and problem gambling hotlines say they have quadrupled over the past year. Now that a smartphone app can turn every couch into a casino, the number of lives that could be ruined will surely escalate as well. And that's too bad. The goddess of fortune couldn't be more delighted. That's our weekend review. I'm Freddie Bell.
In today's world, we really need words of encouragement. Introducing Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell. Let your mind be opened by the wisdom of thought. Let the inspiration of the words feed your mind, body, and spirit. Regardless of the issues you face each day, Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell can help you power through. Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell, a handy reference, available on Amazon, FreddieBell.com, and Barnes & Noble.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
It's time now to talk about your health, and I'm wondering if you wake up regularly with stiff muscles, creaky joints, or the general feeling that your body simply isn't as limber as it once was when you went to bed. The first thing to know is that you're not alone. Waking up with a tight body is almost a universal human experience that, according to a physical therapist and assistant professor in the Department of Kinesiology at the University of Connecticut, Mary Claire Capetta says that it's quite common for it to happen every day. But while feeling stiff in the morning is normal and typically dissipates quickly, it's also uncomfortable while it lasts. Mary Claire says the good news is that there are a few tricks that we can use when you feel stiff and even before the feeling arises to help you get off to a faster start and relief even faster. Most of the time, that tight feeling when you wake up is a result of overnight changes to the lubrication in two different features of the body, the joints and the fascia. The fascia is a complex group of connective tissues that surround and support the muscles, soft tissue, organs, and bones. Think of the fascia as a fibrous web that wraps around and through muscle tissue to give it structure and stability. It forms multiple layers with a gel-like lubricant in between that allows the layers to slide and glide smoothly, which helps you to feel loose and limber. That, according to Dr. Antonio Stecco, a fascio researcher and professor of rehabilitation medicine at New York University. In certain situations, like when your body temperature drops, when you've been still for an extended period of time, or when lactic acid builds up in the muscles and fascia during intense exercise, the lubricant becomes thicker and the layers of fascia can't glide as easily, leading to feelings of stiffness. When we sleep, many of those thickening situations occur. You're usually still for a long time, say 8 hours, and your body temperature tends to drop. Your joints may also continue to feel stiff in the morning. In healthy joints, a thick fluid lubricates the space between the ends of our bones, which are capped with cartilage, to help them to move freely and comfortably. Whenever we're still for a long period, like when we're sleeping, the cartilage sucks up the lubricant like a sponge, Capetta says, making our joints feel creaky. How can we feel better? The good news is that the remedy for stiffness in the morning, whether it's caused by your fascia or your joints, is the same. Movement. While we're still in bed and lying on our backs, start by doing a full body stretch like a cat or a dog does when they first wake up by extending your legs and arms wide in opposite directions. Then try pointing and flexing your toes or stretching just your arms and torso, mimicking the cliche just woke up stretch. To bring fluid back into your joints, try gently bending and unbending your knees and elbows, rolling your wrist and your ankles, or gently nodding your head from side to side. If you still feel stiff once you've gotten out of bed, try marching in place, continuing to bend and rebend any joints that feel stiff, Capetta says. If your back and the sides of your body feel tight, you could try a gentle stretch like a loose forward hang toward your toes with slightly bent knees or side bends in cat-cow yoga poses. Studies suggest that a regular yoga practice can be effective in reducing discomfort associated with joint and muscle stiffness and chronic back pain. Do whatever feels good for you. If you have a dog, taking it out first thing in the morning might get your body juices flowing and help you feel more nimble more quickly. If it's a cold morning, try a hot shower. While it's healthy and normal to feel a little tight after a night of stillness, you might feel even more tight if your baseline flexibility is already limited. You can lessen this by staying limber and maintaining an active lifestyle in general. If you don't already stretch regularly, adding even 15 minutes of stretching to any day part can help you to feel less stiff when you wake up. If you sit in front of the computer for work, try moving around and changing positions throughout the day. All of this information is just enough to make you lose your hair. Can you hear that? It's the sound of our hair follicles closing up shop. The past almost 2 years haven't been kind to our previously lustrous manes. Stress, whether from a global pandemic or a significant life event such as a divorce, job loss, or illness, can wreak havoc on our noggins. Dr. Maria Sharon, a dermatologist at Vanguard Skin Specialists in Colorado Springs, has seen a noticeable uptick in visits from people experiencing a temporary hair loss caused by stress that pushes hair roots into the resting state. She says it's one of those things that can be triggered by physical exercise, like being hospitalized or certain medications or losing a lot of weight, but also illness or the loss of a family member or personal stressors. Anything that affects the body medically or psychologically can induce a type of hair loss. But she says you won't know it's happening until about 3 months after the fact due to the three-part hair cycle. The anagen phase, which is the growth phase, can last 2 to 8 years and refers to about 85 to 90% of our hair. Catagen, transition shedding is the 2 to 3 week when hair follicles shrink. Telogen, which is resting, lasts for about 2 to 4 months, and at the end, the hair falls out. Dr. Sharon says everybody's growth phase is different. That's why some people can grow their hair longer. Typical hair loss is about 100 to 150 hairs per day, but you'll be the best judge of what's happening on your own head. And if you do ascertain something abnormal is happening, what can be done about it? Well, first, stop stressing about it, which can cause more hair loss. The second step, sadly, there is no second step, except to wait it out. The situation can resolve itself once the stressor is removed from the equation. Nothing has been scientifically proven to make a huge impact on the process, she says, though sometimes she suggests topical applications of minoxidil, which is generic for Rogaine. It might switch hairs into the growth phase, but she says most of the time, hair loss will stop on its own. And if a stressor can't be removed, such as this seemingly never-ending pandemic, you can find ways to manage the stress, such as therapy, medication, or even exercise. Above all, it might help to know that dermatologists across the United States are seeing an increase in this type of hair shedding in their clients. We're hoping you don't lose your hair. I'm Freddie Bell, and you're listening to New Beginnings. And right now it's time for this week's Words to the Wise. And our word to the wise is simply this: value your relationships. Value your relationships. If you'd like to learn more, visit freddiebell.com. That's it. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Thank you for making us a part of your weekend. Every day is a chance for a new beginning. Goodbye, everybody.